This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the Chelsea Fancast, the 50 years of Chelsea, with me, Stamford Chidge, and Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Lovely to be on the show.
And the legend that is Mark Meehan. He's written a book, you know.
Has he?
He has.
Good, he's a talented man. You're a talented man.
No idea.
Didn't you realise you'd done it? Did it just happen?
No,
you just
idea.
Did it in your
no
sleep?
Idea.
You did, yeah.
So there we go. Anyway, we're talking all about the season from 2000 to 2001. The season that saw the departure of Gianluca Vialli and the arrival of Claudio Ranieri, who, of course, I'd love to know actually when he was given this nickname, but of course he became well known as the Tinker Man before he departed Chelsea. And we're now in the second half of the season. We've just basically wrapped up December. We're now in January. And I've said really in this part, you know, the second half of the season was kind of where he earned his nickname as the Tinker Man. And there was very good evidence of this in the first game of the new year, which was against Villa, which is at home. We won 1-0, courtesy of another Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank goal. But Mark, Wise and De Hoy were dropped for this one, and there was a lot of unrest going on. This time not about the fact that nobody liked Vialli, but this time because nobody could understand Ranieri. Wise particularly had the massive hump, didn't he?
He did. And again, if people watch the end of season video, there's an interview with Dennis on there. And it does sound like he put a transfer request in around about this time. He wasn't happy about being dropped. But more importantly, he wasn't happy about where he's being played. And he gave examples on the video where he's asked to play, you know, right wing back, right midfield, left wing back. And, you know, we've talked about it many times on previous shows when we talked about 50 years. The best place for Dennis was in the centre of midfield. Yeah, and the impact and he had, and he was getting better and better each season. And for some strange reason, and it wasn't just Wise, it's other players as well. I think Ranieri sort of at times seemed to like a three at the back, 3-4-3, but sometimes a 3-4-3 almost became 3-5 or 3-6. And you sometimes have, as Jimmy's the lone striker and players out wide, he was already beginning to tinker. And we had the example also from the goalkeeping point of view, which none of us know why, when he took Ed De Hoy off at half-time against Derby when we were 3-0 up. But he literally did drop De Hoy for this game after Ipswich getting two goals back. And Ed De Hoy never plays again this season either. Kudacini becomes first choice from this game in. But also, our favourite pantomime villain, Mr. LeBerth, was upset as well. So he wasn't happy either with Ranieri. And I think he was in and out of the side. So he was being linked at this point with a move to Monaco. So he wanted to leave as well. So not the best start to the new year with Chelsea.
I think he wasted Dennis Wise's abilities in the whole of this season from then on.
Well, I think that's why Dennis was pissed off, JK.
You know, but I think he hastened the end of his career actually as well, because as Mark so rightly said, he got better and better and was an absolutely terrific player. But I don't know why I felt that, you know, Viali may have been against various players, but I thought that Ranieri was against Dennis in some way. And it's almost as if he was trying them all out without looking at their reputation, with actually seeing who they were. It's almost as if they were all people he was unaware of. So he was giving them a go in different positions. Absolutely right, Mark. Middle of midfield. Fantastic. Fantastic player for Chelsea. Played him completely out of position and ruined the opportunity for the club to improve as the season was going on. I found it absolutely bizarre.
Well, the other thing is, JK, about Dennis is that, you know, he had an agreement with the club that he would see out his career at the club and then go into a coaching role.
Yeah.
And of course, as we now know, he left the next season, if I recall. But, you know, so that all went the way of the pair. You know, Franco Zola had a similar contract as well. And there, I think later on we'll get to this in a minute, but there were waverings about whether Franco might stay at the end of the season. So it's kind of weird. They fire a manager because the dressing room don't like him. They bring a new manager in and they don't like the way that he plays, his tactics. They don't like the fact that he beasts them. And they all get upset about it. Anybody would have thought we were talking about the last 10 years. But no, we're talking about 22 years ago. What do I keep saying? Nothing changes at Chelsea.
I think the difference was with Viali was that he'd been a player and you got little factions being created. Whereas in this instance, I think probably everybody didn't like the manager. That was full stop, because he was aloof from them. Yeah. He didn't have any intention of ever being their friend. And I honestly think he tried people out. He used this as an experiment, and that's why he started tinkering. And well, I think he probably did that most of the time, because he didn't know what the players were like. And this bizarre reaction of immediately getting Jokanović in was just bemused me when there were other players who could play in midfield. You know, Morris flits in and out for the season. He's not there. He's in some games. He then isn't.
I wonder if Ranieri just had a very kind of jaundiced. You know, I mean, it's really interesting because we missed out on this when we're talking about why did they hire Ranieri. And there was that horrible quote from Colin Hutchinson saying that Chelsea are a continental team playing in England, which is so pretentious, it's not true. And I want, but there is an element of truth in it, that we were a team full of, you know, European, well, foreign players, period. And I wonder,
that might be the reason.
Well, I want,
why,
yeah,
why
I,
got
I wonder if,
Ran,
I wonder
place.
If, Ran, yeah, exactly. And I wonder if Ranieri had a very myopic European view of English football and decided that, you know, English midfielders can't pass. All they can do is run around and tackle. And maybe, I mean, that, you know, Jokanović is, in a sense, is like a poor man's Jorginho. That was his role, to sit in the middle of the midfield and distribute the ball. The trouble was, of course, he expected about 2 weeks to be able to do that. And by the, you know, and he was, or, I mean, he used to lose possession all the time. And he was
all
utterly static,
time.
You know,
all
because he
time.
Felt he always thought he'd have more time. And maybe Ranieri wanted, you know, very Italian type or continental type midfielders to do that role. And he looked at Dennis and Jody and players like that and thought, oh, no, well, they're English, so they can't do that. Which is prejudice, really. Mark?
Yeah. Here's a question for you. If the FIFA kids called Jorginho J5, if they were around when we had Jokanović in the side, what would they call him?
J20. he was equally unpalatable.
Very good. Very,
very,
very
good.
It's okay. I'm here all week. One day I will fulfill my one and only remaining ambition, which is to be the warm-up act for the Rudy V's.
Oh, you can do it whenever you like.
There we go. I have to say, and I know this is blowing smoke up my own arse, which is not a really pleasurable thing to do for everybody else, but I was very impressed with myself that I got the line, you know, of course you are, you knob, you know, without you having to prompt me. I thought it was the only person so to do, in fact.
Indeed. I just looked in your direction and you were there.
Well, I was following what was going on. I was listening to the narrative. I was in it, you know. I was concentrating on it.
Thank you. To everybody listening, it's a song called I Fell in Love with a Zombie Girl.
Yeah.
And all the audience have to do special effects with it. And one of the lines is, of course you are, you knob, after I've said, do you think I've made the right decision about going out with a zombie girl, or am I a complete dick? Of course you are, you know. That was the line.
Anyway. I just basically channeled the Chelsea fan cast into the performance.
You did so well. I may say your dancing at the end channeled the Chelsea fan cast as well. Phenomenal.
Did it? I don't think about the dancing at all. Apart from
I have it on video.
Oh, you haven't? I really don't want to see that ever. I would have probably been more appropriate to have me in, you know, dance like your dad. I think that's probably about my level. Anyway, we're going madly off fucking pieced here. Of course we are. Of course we are, you knob. Anyway, where are we? Who were we talking about? Unrest in the camp, Tinkerman, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, look, we're getting on with it now. We beat Villa. Le Berf was linked with a move to Monaco, by the way, if we hadn't said that already. Anyway, 1-0, we beat Villa. First game of the...
Well, can we just talk briefly about Ipswich?
If we must, because we've kind of moved on from that, mate.
Oh, OK. Just wanted to... Ipswich, Johnson scored a terrific goal in that. I was just really intrigued by Johnson's abilities. It's just getting better and better all the time.
Well, he scored a hatful of goals, didn't he, whilst Jimmy was away, and he gets them in braces, which is always very interesting about Ida. But
Ipswich, this was their sort of big season before they then were
relegated. Well, they finished above us, didn't they, at the end?
They did. And Marcus Stewart they had playing, who I always thought was a very decent player.
Always used to have him in my fantasy teams.
Yes, he went to Sunderland, scored 27 goals. He had 27 goals, 75 games for Ipswich. He had a very decent player indeed. And they had the slightly mad Titus Bramble, playing at centre-half. Do you remember him? He was voted the worst player ever seen in the Premier League at one stage. I thought that was really interesting when he was playing for Newcastle. Anyway, I digress. Yeah.
You do, but don't worry about it. January saw us, obviously the FA Cup comes to town in January, and that was what we had next. We had Peterborough in the Cup. We won 5-0, pretty easy fare. We then had Arsenal away in the league, where we drew 1-1. Ipswich turned up again mid-January. Ipswich were beaten 4-1 by us, I'm delighted to say. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's now back. We then have Gillingham away in the FA Cup, which we kind of squeaked through. We raced into a 3-0 lead, only for Gillingham. I can't even remember what league they're in now. Probably
we've missed the first 5-0 beating of Peterborough.
No, we haven't. I mentioned that.
You went straight through that.
I mentioned it. I'm just going to tell everybody what happened, and then we'll pick some things up.
Then we'll pick things. Okay. Can I just say about the Gillingham game? I started going out with a young lady who, when I didn't go to Gillingham and I was watching on the box, and as the game started, she stood in front of the telly and said, "That's enough of that," and turned the television off. And I said, "Yes, it is. Bye-bye."
Oh, good move. Yes, quite right. I think a round of applause is absolutely deserved for that. Well done, JK. You made the right choice.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. You love football more than me? Darling, I love Tottenham more than you. Is the answer.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, you've never heard that one before?
No, I haven't.
There we go. That's the appropriate response for that one. But yeah. we're not misogynistic or sexist on this show, I promise.
No, we're not.
We're just doing it as a gag.
It's a gag, and we're just well formed.
Yes. Okay, let's leave it at that, shall we? Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. We beat Gillingham 4-2 in the cup. We raced into a 3-0 lead. They got two back, so it got a bit squeaky, and then Idor finished them off with a 90th minute goal, but we were basically much better than them. One thing I will say about the Gillingham game is both Le Berf and Morris were stretchered off, which was rather inconvenient and nasty. And we finished off the month of January beating Newcastle at home 3-1 again.
Can I say that, sorry, just to Le Berf, I'm sorry to interrupt. Le Berf being stretchered off, it was something I couldn't ever work out there, because it seemed to me that he'd fouled somebody really rather viciously. He didn't appear to be injured at all, and then just lay on the floor and has taken off. And I was wondering whether he'd done it so that it would look as if he didn't need to be sent off, because it was actually the foul he committed looked like a red card, looked like vicious foul play.
That's a good point.
But, and I just wondered whether many players actually did that. They continued their lying on the, you know, that situation where somebody fouls somebody and they pretend to be injured themselves, so they lie on the floor. And I just wondered whether Le Berf had taken it to its logical extreme and been taken off on a stretcher. Because if you look at it on the video, you just think he didn't. didn't get it at all.
It's the kind of thing he would do, actually.
It is the kind of thing LaBeouf would do.
He's a smart cookie.
Very smart cookie. Sorry to interrupt you.
That's all right. As I said, last match of January was Newcastle at home, 3-1. We won that one. Now, the things to pick up on, really, which I'll start with Mark, in an interesting month. The Arsenal game, John Terry, Arsic coming from Man United, and the arrival with some aplomb of Jesper Gronkjaer, Mark.
Yes, as we said, Gronkjaer came in just before Christmas for 7.5 million from Ajax. He comes up on a sub at Arsenal. I was there that day. We weren't playing particularly well in the first half, although, as you say, Terry was having a fine game against Thierry Henry. And Gronkjaer comes on at half-time and just changes the game. And we looked a far better side in the second half. And he carries that form on over the coming games. We talk about the Gillingham game. He has a brilliant game against Gillingham. He's the man of the match. He really takes the game to Gillingham and he gets a couple of goals as well. He scores again against Newcastle. It was almost like when Iron Robin first appeared for Chelsea and he had that real purple patch when he first arrived. And Gronkjaer did. And he actually carries the form into February as well. And we're going to talk about it in a minute, when we play against Man United. And he actually runs Gary Neville ragged that day, which doesn't often happen when Neville was playing for United. He was a very good right back, was Gary Neville. But on this day, Gronkjaer, time and time again, and the press talk about it as well, that was his full home league debut. The hard time he gives to Neville, but we'll come to that in a minute. No, Gronkjaer, really good signing. He goes off the boil a bit, and some of his crosses did go in the goal, but some of his crosses also went in the crowd from time to time.
He lost his radar, didn't he, for Chelsea? That's kind of what happened to him. And he suddenly used to, the next season when I turned up, we started calling him Forrest, was because he'd just run and then there would be like, he reminded me of a player that I used to play with when I was a kid playing for the legends that were Ropley Tigers. And there's a guy called Dave Brill. And Dave was the son of a doctor. From where I grew up, not that that has anything to do remotely with football, but Dave basically was quite posh and he was a rugby player. I think he was a winger when he played rugby. And because we weren't very smart, we just thought, well, we'll make him winger because he can run very fast. But he had no ball control. And it kind of reminded me, Gronkjaer reminded me of him because he would run really fast and then it would all go tits up at the end, wouldn't it, invariably?
But I think, as Mark said, that was the following season.
Yeah,
I think
that's what I'm talking about.
He came this season, he looked absolutely fantastic.
He looked the real deal, didn't he?
He really was the real deal. Yeah. I thought, blimey, we've got another player. When my hopes then rose particularly about, going to be great next season, not realising, of course, that his talents would somewhat wither.
And yet, he scored some absolutely vital goals for Chelsea, not least the one against Liverpool in 2003. But there you go. Mark, John Terry, man of the match against Arsenal away.
Yep, fine game against Henry. And he then, as we go into the latter part of the season, he features more and more. And that's maybe why LaBeouf was disenchanted and wanted to go to Monaco. LaBeouf does leave at the end of the season, ironically. And he begins to form a tremendous partnership with Marcel Desailly.
And learn a lot from him, too.
Indeed, it clearly influenced him. Absolutely.
Yeah. He says so in the interview, doesn't he, actually? He was very nice about Desailly. In fact, about that match. Desailly telling him how to deal with Henry and how they would do it in pairs. I like that a lot. Thought that was very good. The only other thing that happened of note, really, in January, of course, was the bizarre signing. I always thought this was a completely bizarre signing. I mean, that's easy to say with hindsight when we knew what happened, but the signing of Mark Arsic, Bosnić from Man United, Mark.
Yeah, and he doesn't play.
No.
Yeah, he turns up injured. So I don't know what happens about, did they have a medical with him? Surely he passed a medical. Well, he failed a medical at that point, and we'll come to that in a future season, but he was a good keeper in his time, Bosnić, but that was a strange move. Strange, strange move.
The few games he did play for us, he actually kept very well. It just was this, as you say, this was bizarre timing. I don't know what happened here at all.
Indeed. February is upon us, and it starts off with our obligatory defeat to Leicester. Izzet scores against us again. Jimmy replies on 75 minutes. And then Rowett gets their winner with after 76 minutes, 1 minute later. And then we have this game against Man United at home that Mark was alluding to. I have to say, Mark, I mean, obviously you've already talked about Jesper Gronkjær having another great game and running Gary Neville ragged, which very rarely happens. But this was a great game, I thought, and we were very unlucky that it ended up 1-1, really. I think we were the better side on the day by a mile. And these guys are, you know, at the top of the league, by the way.
United go on to win the league, and I know we'll talk about it when we do the end of season wrap-up, but we didn't lose to them this season. You know, we drew both games, and in both games, especially the second half of Old Trafford, we gave them two hard games, two hard 90 minutes over the course of that season. And do you know who cost us the game?
I do, but I'm going to pretend I don't, Mark. Who could that be?
A certain gentleman who was a schoolmaster at Harrow School, who darkened our doorstep in 94, and we said, never again. Well, Eloy was referee this day. Watch it on video, folks, or watch the end of season review. There's clearly a foul on Zola, where he gets fouled, where Zola doesn't get a penalty, where VAR now would give it all day long. This bizarre, bizarre goal, and goal in inverted commas, that would have been our second goal, and we would have been 2-0 up, that Zola scores. And what it is, if you know the shed end corner flag, Van der Hau comes out of the goal for some strange reason, probably either to put the ball in or shatter the ball out of play. And the ball actually hits the corner flag down in the east end shed end corner. And it rebounds to Zola, who slips it past Van der Hau. I think he actually might have put it through his legs.
He did.
And Zola curls the ball.
He kicks it from his legs,
He curls the ball from a really tight ankle into the goal. Now, Ellery disallows the goal because he said the ball went out of play. Now, I rewound this a couple of times and I've watched it. I don't think the ball was out of play, and that was a perfectly good goal that actually cost us the 3 points. When has David Ellery ever cost us a game before against Manchester United?
But it's also the kind of decision that somebody as similarly egotistical as Ellery would make, because he's about 40 yards away and he can see whether the ball has gone out of play or not, because he has that kind of vision, because he is monarch of all he surveys. So it made absolute sense for him to give it out, give it as a throw-in. Because I almost feel that if you can make a big decision as a referee, you feel you've emphasised something about yourself as a person in the day, and you've made a match-changing decision based on a kind of whim. The linesman is in a much better place, has no say in it. As always, we are seeing complete replica. Nothing has changed in all those years. That's 20 years ago. The same thing happens nowadays.
And a clearer penalty on Zola from the foul by Stam, you cannot see. And Mark's right. I mean, the goal that Zola scored, it was definitely in play, right on the corner flag. And the ability that he showed to put the ball in the net.
Wonderful.
I mean, for fuck's sake, you know. They ruined the game, referees.
Zola-style goal. Brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
I know. Goal. Absolutely brilliant. We're a bit unlucky there. We deserved more out of that game than we got, which is largely down to David Ellery. But there you go. The other thing I wanted to ask, Mark, how the hell did Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink miss that chance?
Oh, yeah, he's put through and he lingers on it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But it was like mad. I mean, it was easier to score. But there you go. Say
you cut Hasselbaink some slack because he had a superb.
Oh, no, I'm not digging him out. I just can't believe he missed it. Yeah. You know,
he'd normally have just done it first time, but he takes a first touch for some strange reason, which allows. Who is it who tackles him? Is it Neville?
Oh, I can't remember. It may well have been. It may well have been. Unless I'm about to see it now. I think it was Stam.
All right.
It's hard to see. Sense. The picture's so soft. It's hard to see, but I'm guessing it's Stam. He's a good player, of course, as we all know. And remember, now, the next match, of course, we're still in the FA Cup, which right now, realistically, is our only chance of silverware. And we play Arsenal. Yippity-doo-dah. We're away. We're at Highbury. And one thing I meant to mention, actually, when I was watching the league match on the review, the 1-1, the Highbury Screamer, Mark. Do you know about the Highbury Screamer?
The Highbury Screamer.
Basically, if you watch any match with Chelsea you played, or any team that played Arsenal, in fact, at Highbury in this kind of period, whenever the opposition scored a goal, this young lady would emit screams like she was auditioning for Hammer House of Horror. And me and my mates used to call her the Highbury Screamer. So there you go. Go back and listen to it another time. And you, when JT scores, and in fact, again in the cup match when Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank scores, you will hear the Highbury Screamer. So there you go. Now, yeah, we got them in the cup. Henry scores 52 minutes with a pen. Jimmy scores on 62 minutes. And then bloody Sylvain Wiltord scores two goals in, 11 minutes, 74 and 85, which basically put an end to our FA Cup dreams, Mark, didn't it?
End of the season, really.
It wasn't it?
Yeah, first time since 1993 that we'd not featured in a semi-final. Very, very frustrating. And a pattern that begins to form that we'll talk about in future Fancast shows. Arsenal continually ending our FA Cup for the season. And Wiltord, I don't think he was ever on a losing side against Chelsea. I think he played 11 games against Chelsea and never lost the game. So absolutely sick of the sight of him, So, yeah,
very quick player, wasn't he?
Came on, two goals, killed the game. But the Hasselbank goal, and he got so many during the course of the Hasselbank goal in this game, and like watching it back, and I was in the clock in that day, and I was behind the goal, and the way he turns and hits it, like he spins round and hits it in the top corner, then he does like a somersault afterwards, just an incredible goal. And watching it back on the end of season review, I think they showed the Sky coverage because it was a Sunday game, and Andy Gray is just absolutely eulogising about Hasselbank and saying this is like a striker at the top of his game, because he was being marked by Tony Adams. There was no slap, and he just finds that 1 yard of space to turn and hit at the top corner.
It's the way he bent it in as well, which he was brilliant at doing.
Absolutely brilliant, but just so frustrating, losing, to them of all teams to get knocked out of the FA Cup, which, as I said, sadly, is a pattern that's going to be repeated for a few more years yet. Sick of the sight of them.
He seemed to be very inept at dealing with balls just pumped over the top that are fast, which is once again a pattern that we've replicated quite frequently since. The centre half would be found wanting. They'd miss the ball, or they'd be beaten to the ball by somebody racing forwards. And Wiltord, that was his big thing. He was a very quick, bulky centre forward. Well, winger more than a centre forward, but took the goals well, But if you give them the opportunity, it's just a long pass, beats the defence, gets through, scores,
I think the match turned really. I think it was Ida, possibly. Might have been Gronke. I hit the bar when it was 1-1, it would have been so different. But as Mark says, and this is, really one of the seeds of my hatred of Arsenal was sown around this period where we just could not beat them for love nor money, and particularly in the FA Cup. More of that later, of Chidge's meltdowns about losing to Arsenal in the Cup. So there we go. So we finished February in 10th position in the league, and in March we played Coventry away. It was 0-0. West Ham away, we won 2-0. We'll talk about that in a minute. Home, we lost 2-4 to Sunderland, of all people. And the end of March, we played Middlesbrough and we won 2-1 at home. Guess who scored for Middlesbrough? Dean Windass, that's right. But let's go right back to where we started and pick up on a couple of these things. I mean, really, I think in particular, Mark, the West Ham and the Sunderland games. The West Ham game was our first away win for a year, wasn't it?
Yep, chalk and cheese in that lovely yellow kit. The Hasselbank Gudjonsson double act. Yeah, they both get a goal. Teaming up really well by now. And actually, the other interesting thing about this game, thinking of where we start the season with all that euphoria and hope for the future with our brand new signing, this was Stanic's second start since the start of the season. He'd had a number of subs. We'd missed him for a large part of the season, Stanic.
Was that through injury, though, or just choice?
Yep, through injury. Yeah.
He did his knee, I think, against Villa. And I mean, you know that he was injured out of the game later on, and I think that was the start of it, sadly. I mean, it was just so cruel, because how can you have that start for your club? Two goals on a debut, one of them an absolute, one of the best goals I've seen at Chelsea, and then not play, maybe play another couple of matches. And I mean, he never really recaptured that. But I think it was the knee injury that he got this season that really did for him, because I don't think he ever really recovered. I mean, I know he came back and played, but I mean, one of the nice things about Mario Stanic was, you know, because he got injured again, didn't he, a season or two later, and that pretty much did for him. But he would always be, he would stand at the tunnel and watch the matches. He clearly loved the club, and he was so supportive of the club for somebody whose career was wrecked by it because of the injury. But anyway, we digress.
And of course, through being in the club with Mario Melchior meant that
We've got two Marios. Of course, JK. Fancy forgetting that. That's appalling of me. But there you go.
But as you said, the reverse of the West Ham was that shocking 4-2 defeat against Sunderland.
Man.
Yeah. Sunderland winning 4-2 at Chelsea. End to end, we kept taking the lead. They kept coming back. Then they went ahead. And there was a real key point in this game, because, as I said earlier, Gronkar's in this really early part Chelsea career purple patch. And the Tinker Man is tinkering. He always seems to make three substitutes every game, usually around the 65th minute.
Yes, absolutely.
There or thereabouts. You could have a bet on it. So he actually takes Gronkar off. And we're 3-2 down to Sunderland. They've just gone ahead. And we talked about it earlier. The Viali charts start up again. The crowd are singing, "You don't know what you're doing." And he's actually bringing Zola on. But the crowd were jeering because he'd taken Gronkar off.
Yeah.
You know, I think their viewpoint is, well, if you're going to bring Zola on, keep Gronkar on as well and take someone like Jukanovic off if he was on the pitch. Yeah. So the Viali charts once more reared their head again. We lose 4-2. Viali charts continue. And, you know,
I think again, also,
the beginning of the Tinker Man. He started tinkering now. Yeah.
I think, Mark, the other thing about that was there was huge optimism for that game. And I remember because we had the opportunity of qualifying for the Champions League.
Yep.
Just suddenly there was this, because we were playing better. We seemed to be on a roll. We'd just beaten the Hammers. And we thought, well, we'll put them to the sword. And then we're going to be in a position to possibly get in the top three. And
yep, absolutely right.
And interesting enough, there was a Gronkar goal given offside earlier on.
Was it offside?
There was one earlier that he wasn't
against Sunderland. I don't think it was, mate.
No, he wasn't. He was given offside, but VAR would now have thought differently. But you know, once again, it's the human eye, and it does it. It's from a Hasselbank pass, and yes, but you've jogged my memory there. I remember that exactly. That business of Gronkar coming off in that position, and he was playing out of his skin. And us absolutely giving Ranieri a mouthful.
Did you chant Viali?
I don't think I may have done, actually, in this instance.
Yeah, see?
Weirdly, because I felt that was the best way of showing my dismay.
Rather than say, Ranieri, down with that sort of thing. You chanted Viali.
Yeah, rather than go Ranieri out. Yeah. I thought that just because Viali was like a kind of shorthand, even though I didn't really want Viali back. But yeah, I was so disappointed. But yeah, absolutely right, Mark. This constant three off that appeared to have nothing to do with how the way anybody was playing was something that Ranieri would do for the rest of his tenure at Chelsea. Mm. It was mystifying beyond belief and irritated me so much. Mm. Anyway.
Well, I mean, we still ended up in sixth. This is now the end of March. We're in sixth position. So, you know, we've got April and a bit of May to go. So hope for a Champions League qualification has not yet gone. One other very sad note, right at the end of March, Mark, wasn't there, which absolutely saddened. I mean, actually, it's not a funny thing, really. But the thing that I've always remembered about this was, A, how sad we were. But it's one of the few things I've ever really agreed on with my Arsenal mates.
Yep, the sad news that David Rowcastle passed away at the end of this month at only 33 years of age, from Hodgkin's lymphoma. He only played 29 games for Chelsea. A lot of the time when he was with us, he played through injury. People will tell you, like, people know Nigel Spector's a good friend of mine. You know, Nigel used to sit next to him in the dressing room. His legs were covered in scars, you know, for the amount of surgery he'd had. But he was always the first on the training ground. He'd play through pain. He really enjoyed his time at Chelsea Football Club, really enjoyed it. Saw a bit of a renaissance. And I think if anyone was at that Bruges Cup Winners' Cup game at Stamford Bridge, which, again, is probably in many fans' top 10 home games of all time, he was majestic that night, absolutely superb for Chelsea. A great player. He came to us late in his career, but such a tragedy. But also the sad news as well that one of our, you know, good song title players, Jess Hogg, he had to retire the week before through injury. So no more Jess Hogg, I can boogie. He boogied no more.
Indeed. Yeah, losing Rocky was tragic. As I said, it's about the only thing I've ever agreed on with my Arsenal friends who they loved Rocas, or of course they saw the best of him. He was a phenomenally talented midfield player, he really was. And as I said, you know, we only saw him for a little while, but he showed his class, as they say. Right, we're off to April now, unless JK wants to comment on Rocastle.
No, terrific player, great passer, and one of those players appeared to have more time on the ball than you.
Classy.
You think, very classy.
Yeah. That's Arsenal over, really, full of class, as they like to tell us. But in this case, they were right. Rocastle was a class above. Anyway, we're into April, so we're in the home stretch of the season. We played Derby away. We won 4-0. We had the obligatory 1-0. We lost. Wash my mouth out. We beat Saints 1-0 at home. We had the obligatory win against Spurs 3-0 away. And we managed to lose to Charlton. How delightful. 1-0 at home. And then we lost 2-0 away to Leeds, which, as JK will no doubt tell us, was mind-numbingly irritating. But then again, they were in the semi-final of the Champions League, would you believe? Let's pick up a few things from there. Let's talk about the Spurs game, Mark and JK. I mean, you know, obviously it's a delight to beat Spurs, but we're kind of in the middle of this hot patch that lasted 28 years, aren't we, really?
Yep, we're once more, normal service resumed, winning at Tottenham. Glenn Hoddle had actually turned up during the season, and when we beat them earlier in the season at Bridge, George Graham was manager. Hoddle had now taken over. And as JK said earlier, and I know we dropped the points against Sunderland, but amazingly, we're still in sixth position after the season we'd had. And those sort of like 3-4 wins on the spin, we now had 5 games to go, and we were still in with a chance of the Champions League. Ipswich was just ahead of us, and we had a game in hand on Ipswich, and we were 2 points behind Leeds. And as we said, Leeds were coming up as well. You know, third place, amazingly, after the season we had, was still on. You know, and that Tottenham win raised everybody's expectation once more. It's great beating Tottenham, but we had a shout, you know, of getting into the Champions League. And then we blow it the following week at home to Charlton by losing to them.
No doubt you were both there. I mean, JK, can you? You're looking at me like, for fuck's sake.
Of course I was there. Yeah.
No, I mean, you're not saying for fuck's sake. Of course I should know you were there. For fuck's sake, how did we lose to Charlton 1-0? Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. When you follow a big team like Chelsea, one of the most frustrating things is not being able to get a ticket for the match, especially when it's away and not live on TV in the UK. What can you do? Get updates from your mates? Follow online commentary? Listen to the radio? Let's face it, it's not the same as actually watching the match live, is it? NordVPN have the solution to every football supporter's match day problems when they can't watch the match live. NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords. It's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Yeah, it was... what do you do? It was Scott Parker played, didn't he, for them?
And, played out of his skin, of course.
Played out of his skin, yeah. And Graham Stewart was playing for them. Bobby Stewart was playing for them.
Didn't he get a great ovation from us?
Yeah, he did. Got a good reception.
Because
he'd
been to Everton, hadn't he? And he'd gone there after that. I mean, they were a lot of journeymen, weren't they, Charlton? But they always managed to sort of... I mean, that was the double over us for the season, wasn't it? It was... I think, actually, they only had... My memory reminds me here. They only had one shot on goal. I think we were that all over them. But they just defended like lions. It was just so disappointing. But this was the season, wasn't it? You just, I mean, I can't remember the team. It'd be interesting to find out what the team was as to who he'd mucked around with, who he'd stuck in.
You want to know the Charlton team?
Not the Charlton team.
Who he played, the team he picked for against Charlton.
Yes, please.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, incidentally, Charlton, this was the Charlton under Alan Kirbishley. Yeah. Who had got them into what we would call like a good middle of the table established Premier League side, and they were very irritating to play against. And as we said, Scott Parker was a good player, definitely their best player at the time. We had Mike Dean as the referee. Bloody hell, God, he's been refereeing that long. You would have thought he would have improved with age, but clearly not. Right, Cudicini, Desai, Gus Poyet, Hasselbank. Ida came on for Hasselbank at half time. Dennis Wise, Mario Stanic, Graham Rousseau, Melchior, Sam Dalabona, Franco Zola, and Gronkiar came on for him at half-time. John Terry.
Decent side.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, he takes off... he took Zola off for Gronkiar, and he took Jimmy off for Ida.
But you want to know why wasn't Jimmy playing with Ida, considering that was a combination that had been hugely successful? Why did he feel it necessary not to play the two of them?
Because he was playing Zola instead.
If you make a choice, don't you? Play Zola instead with Jimmy, possibly, but then you bring Ida on. But for me, if you can accommodate all three of them for the season, then, you know, in the forward line, do it. They're all fantastic.
Well, I mean, you would play a 3-4-2-1.
Yeah, yeah.
Ted Rogers.
Easily done. Easily Almost. Done. To have Zola on the bench or Ida on the bench is absolutely stupid.
I know. But that's
what... Jimmy said the best combination for him was Ida up front with him.
Yeah.
But you could not pick Zola. So you say you'd play Jimmy and Ida up top and you play Zola behind.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah, so you'd play 1-2, 3-4-1-2. Yeah.
Yeah. Excuse me, we've worked it out. What's the manager doing? You know, Zola's a class act. Jimmy's a class act. Ida's a class act. Don't put one of them on the bench. Accommodate them. What's the matter with him?
Yeah. No, mate. I mean, I'm not going to argue with anything. Not that I would argue with you anyway, but I'm not going to argue with anything. Mark, the Leeds away game, if we wanted to secure Champions League qualification, really was a must-win game because they were above us in the table. We were 5 points behind them by the time we played them. 4 games to go. And of course we kind of felt we had a chance really because they were playing Valencia in the Champions League semi-final, weren't they? But I think would I be right in saying they were a much better team on the day than we were?
They were, and I think this was Leeds' sort of purple patch when they had O'Leary and Risdale breaking the bank, and I think they signed Rio Ferdinand at round about this time for a ridiculous amount of money. They signed Robbie Keane, Viduka. So they were spending a lot of money. And it was the perfect time to play them because they had their Champions League semi-final against Valencia the following Wednesday. So if there were ever an opportunity to sort of soften up Leeds. And to be fair, our Chelsea players on the day had 5 of them got booked. So they certainly got stuck into Leeds. But Leeds were the better side on the day. We lost 2-0. 2 late goals, Keane and Viduka. And that basically was our Champions League chance gone. Yeah, we had a good spell. We forced ourselves back into it with our form at the end of March, early April. We won 4 games in a row. But the defeats against Charlton and Leeds, if we'd won both of those, ironically, we would have got into the Champions League.
Yeah, it wasn't that far away, which is remarkable.
I, of course, went to the game. And I just
got to the Leeds game.
This business. I mean, Viduka, very good player.
Great goal.
As you say, Very good team. Very good team indeed. But, you know, we were holding out till the 86th minute, which was when Keane scored. Keane, terrific player. Had a terrific series of players, but we're doing okay. But it's just this constant thing of you get towards the end of the season with the possibility of doing stuff which we'd had the season before, and you just go, oh god, that's happened again. That's why I get the more we get into the season, the more all these memories come flooding back, and I'm going, oh no, I can't remember. I remember going there and being so disappointed. We were doing so well, holding them at 0-0 and having chances and being a decent side. You know, we've got decent players who are not being managed properly. And I came away bitterly disappointed, as I did a lot during this period of watching us play.
Well, indeed. I mean, you know, I think if you're going to blame anything, you're going to blame the defeat on Charlton at home. I mean, that really shouldn't
but
have
at
happened.
At the same time, you go with hope, don't you? You know, you think, hang on, well, I mean, that may have been the case. We're all over Charlton. They just managed to, we failed to put the ball in the net, which was beyond me. But some of them played out of their skin against us. And they were, as you say, Charlton were, they finished 12th so often that I think they then had ideas above their station. They sacked Beardsley, Kerbishley, and they all fell apart after that because they were attempting to get further than 12th. And they should just have stayed in the division, being a team that was their great achievement. But once they had these aspirations to get any higher, then the whole thing fell apart, unfortunately.
And sadly, their goal came from a Cudicini, a very rare Cudicini
error.
But there you go. But I mean, Leeds, you know, where we, well, you know, I mean, if we were unlucky against Charlton, we were a bit unlucky against Leeds. I mean, Zola cracked a beautiful shot against the post.
Yeah.
You know, which would have changed the game because I think it was 0-0 at the time, but it wasn't to be. Okay, so we do end up in sixth at the end of April. Bit of a comedy goal, by the way, but Robbie Keane scored for Leeds, which didn't help. But anyway, we end up sixth in the league at the end of April. We now only have three more games. The last home game against Everton at the beginning of May, and then two away games against Liverpool and Man City. To secure some sort of a decent position, even though Champions League may well have gone. We beat Everton 2-1 at home. We draw away to Liverpool 2-2. Now, this was the season that Liverpool basically did a treble of cups. They did the League Cup and the FA Cup. How bizarre. I'm surprised we didn't mention that as a comparable season, actually. But, yeah, anyway, on our review show. But, yeah, they won both the FA Cup and the League Cup and the UEFA Cup. And Man City, we went up there and we won 2-1. They were already relegated by that stage, which I think was when they went a long way down and had to come back up again, was it, Mark?
I don't know. Was that when they went down? No, was that a previous relegation?
I think that was 90s, wasn't it?
That was in the 90s, when Alan Ball was manager.
Alan Ball. I can't help it. If you ever mention Alan Ball to me, it's automatic.
My favourite chant ever.
Come on, I'll let you do it just because I'm kind. Go on.
Alan Ball.
So when I said to some of the boys on Friday night, I said, this is basically the Chelsea fan cast that we're seeing in the Rudy V's, because that's what we get every Monday night. That is exactly what I was talking about.
I'm being unfair, actually. It should be in a high-pitched voice from the very beginning.
No, don't worry. No, enough. Right, anyway, back to the football.
Because that's the way he spoke.
I know. Yeah, so, Mark, Everton game. Yeah, I mean, you know, the Tinker Man does it again. I mean, you know, we beat them fairly comfortably, it has to be said, although it was only 2-1. But there was a bit of unrest in the stands again.
What a way to end the season. So your last home game should always finish on a high if you possibly can. Lap of appreciation, etc. And the good news, after all the speculation that had gone on the previous months, and there was lots of talk about Zola going back home to Italy because his wife was homesick for her family. And Chelsea managed to persuade Zola to stay on for a couple more years. And that should be a cause for celebration. If people remember, in the Matthew Harding Lower that day, people actually brought along banners saying, "Thank you, Mrs. Zola." So fans were delighted. A player of that class was staying for two more seasons. And then the bizarre thing, you know, and he did many bizarre substitutions, Claudio Ranieri. You're keeping Gianfranco Zola. It's the last home game of the season. And I think what most people wanted to see was a Zola goal to finish off the season before they break for the summer if they weren't doing the Liverpool-Man City game. And he brings Zola off not to bring a Idergard Johnson or a Jesper Gronkjaer onto the pitch or even a try out a untried youngster. He brings on Jokanović.
You don't know what you're doing. Yeah.
Viali.
Did you chant that?
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you chant Viali?
No.
No.
Funnily enough.
You sure?
Just you don't know what you're doing. Amidst a few other choice words directed towards the dugout.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, understandably, it was all a bit bizarre. I mean, we played really well against Liverpool, I think. I mean, you know, they were a good cup side. They were pretty shonky in the league, as we know. I'm just trying to figure out where they finished up in the league, actually, funnily enough.
They finished third. We actually rained on their parade that evening. Because you're right, they had their triple cup. But also, this would have been the highest Liverpool finish for many years because they'd gone through their in the doldrums period, going through different managers. And us taking a point off them saw Arsenal finish second and Liverpool finish third.
Yeah. Another two.
We cost them second place.
Good. That's what we want to know. Another two great Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank goals and two goals from Michael Owen, of course. Hardly surprising there because he was peak Michael Owen at that time of his career. So, Mark, the one thing I want to ask you about what was basically a fairly inconsequential game, which was the Man City away game. Something happened in this game that I didn't know. I mean, obviously we won 2-1, which meant we ended up in sixth, which was the final position for us, which meant we qualified for the UEFA Cup, which is the fifth year in a row that we had qualified for Europe, even in a disappointing season that had promised a lot. But there was something that happened after that, which I had no knowledge of.
Well, what happened, obviously, as we said, City were relegated. So there's a bit of unrest amongst the City fans because they've been relegated because they actually came up promoted the previous season after being down in the doldrums, the Gillingham game, etc. I'm sure, if I remember rightly, I think a City fan ran on the pitch during the game, I think went for Wise, if I could remember that wrong, because I know Wise scored the open goal. But at the end of the game, and if you remember Main Road, if you know where the Kippax was, there was a period for a number of years where the Chelsea section was, if you were looking out on the TV screen, you can see the Kippax off opposite you. To the left-hand side, in the far corner, the right-hand corner, is where the away fans went during the 90s. So there was about 3,000 Chelsea up there. And in the same stand, they shared it with the Man City fans. And at the end of the game, obviously, City fans were on the pitch. And there was a fight between both respective supporters that ran into several hundred of both teams. And the memorable thing was, I think, the Daily Mail, I think, on the Monday, published a photo. Because actually, you know, after the sort of summer of love, Acid House, etc., football grounds, there hadn't been much fighting in football grounds for quite a while. So this was almost like a throwback to the 80s. And they showed photos of the fighting fans. And of the hundreds fighting, you couldn't distinguish between the Man City and the Chelsea fans because most were wearing casual Stone Island gear, whatever. But there was one gentleman, and we talked about the blue kit at the start of tonight's programme. A well-known face is all I will say from Chelsea yesteryear, smack bang in the middle of the fighting. And everyone just saw that, but yep, I know who he is.
Okay. Does his surname begin with H?
It doesn't. I knew it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Mad bastard that he is. Bless his heart. Anyway. So there we go. That was the season that was 2000-2001. I mean, for me, JK, I mean, you know, for me, it will always be defined by the sacking of Viali, really, who had lost the dressing room and the media, but not the fans. Because, they, I mean, you aside, there were constant chants of Viali throughout the season. And that, I know, continued into the next season because I was actually there. So I know that it did and I was joining in with it. But I think you can say it was defined by that because, in a sense, everything else that happened, Ranieri and the Tinkerman stuff, all flowed from that, really, didn't it? It didn't resolve anything. That's the bizarre thing, isn't it?
Well, I think we spent the rest of the season after he'd gone trying to work out what exactly Ranieri was trying to do, which didn't help and made us yearn for this supposedly purple period while Viali was in charge. But it was apparent to me from the very beginning of the season that he was likely to be losing his job. In fact, we were all predicting it wouldn't take very long, just because of his communications. This very strange thing about saying you had to have two teams, one for away performances and one for home, and the stuff coming out in the press and his rows with LeBeouf, and the fact that Southgate was coming and that he wasn't coming, and you yearned for the sacking to take place so there'd be some kind of calm. The trouble was that nobody had heard of Ranieri, and it became absolutely apparent as the season went on that he really didn't have a clue as to what should be happening in the Premier League. Because to me, this was a fantastic team of players that some of whom should never have been sold, some of whom still had plenty to give to the side and had played superbly. And he managed to fart about for most of the season. So we didn't know what was actually happening, and he wasted opportunities, as we will find out. He wasted opportunities for nearly all his career, despite being backed by the board, as we will discover. More and more purchases were made at even higher figures.
Well, they were for a little while, but then it all changes. But we'll get into that.
Ultimately, but I think there was a period.
You're right. Well,
you know, where
call it as it is. Lampard, 12 million next season. Yeah,
indeed,
exactly.
Indeed. So that's my view is there was a kind of inevitability that Viali would go, but at the same time, I thought he would be replaced with somebody of
a top manager,
a better quality.
Because I mean, you know, you can't call Ranieri at that time a top manager.
No,
it was a poor appointment, I think, in hindsight. And I think in hindsight, you're right. I think in hindsight, if we had been reading the runes of the previous season, you could tell that it was all going tits up in the dressing room with Viali. So it shouldn't have been the surprise that it was to me.
Indeed.
And I was very saddened by it. I absolutely loved the stuff out of Viali as a player. And he had just won us 5 trophies, bearing in mind that I had spent the majority of my life having never seen Chelsea win a trophy until the 90s, you know, apart from the 4 Members Cup. So for somebody to come in and win 5 trophies, he was like a god for me as a manager. So,
well, when you're saying it like that, I feel that I'm being very critical, but I felt that he had the opportunity at the end of the season to win the league, and he blew it. And
so there were a couple of seasons prior where that was, you know, definitely the case, as we know. Mark, for me, the best thing about the season was the signing of Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, who I think established himself in that season unquestionably as our best number 9 since Kerry Dixon. He scored, the highest number of goals in the top flight since Kerry, who got 36 in 84, 85, and in any league since 88, 89, when Kerry got 28. He won the Golden Boot for the Premier League with 23 goals. And of course, Ida was kind of growing or proving to be a really good foil for him too. So, you know, we kind of found ourselves with arguably our best 2 strikers for a generation at a time when the team was in transition and going downhill a bit. And I kind of feel, what a load of bollocks, because we got these 2 great strikers, Jimmy in particular, and it was wasted in a sense, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a frustrating season, but you're absolutely right. You know, the signing of Hasselbaink, superb and so confident. You want that in your centre forward. Like, if you think about where we've gone in the last couple of seasons and the strikers we've bought, where we've talked many times that actually a lot of football is not just the physical side, it's the mental side. And having that confidence and wondering whether some of our more recent acquisitions haven't got it mentally. You know, Jimmy had, you know, what do they say, had the minerals, but he also had them in his head as well. He actually believed he was the best striker in the Premier League, and he played like he was the best striker in the Premier League. I was lucky, if you know Nick Till and his pub, the Duke of Edinburgh in Ascot, I was lucky before lockdown, he organised one of his Legends nights with Jimmy. And just listen to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink for a couple of hours. Yeah, even now, 20 years on, he was just so confident in his ability and absolutely delighted to join Chelsea Football Club. And I have regrets about Viali. I think we should have stuck with him a bit longer. And Hasselbaink talks about Viali ringing him up when he was away on holiday, you know, when he was at Atletico Madrid. And Viali saying to him, I'm buying you, I'm breaking the club transfer record because you're the guy that will win us the Premier League. And I think if we persevered with Viali a bit longer, maybe cleared out a few more of the sort of like unrestful people in the dressing room. I think if you take Leboeuf out, I think Di Matteo and Zola, I think, would have stayed in line. Hasselbaink makes reference to that. And I think we...
Played Thome, I agree.
Yeah, we'd have kept Emerson Thome. We would have never signed Winston Bejarda. Bejarda was the downfall of Viali. Because actually, we had a lot of good players still. Yeah, we had Lasso. Yeah, we had good cover and so in Babiaro. We had Melchiot. We had Albert Ferrer when he was fit. We could have done a better job with Panucci. We had Poyet. We had Di Matteo.
We had Dennis Wise.
We had Dennis Wise. We bought a good player.
And we had young players coming through. I mean, we had Sam Dalabona, John Terry.
Sam Dalabona, Jody Morris was there as well. Yeah. So we had the makings of a really good
side. Good balance, mate.
But somehow, over the course of that season, obviously after Viali went, sad to see him go, but there was something fundamentally wrong, you know, at Chelsea Football Club. But those great players that we had and great players coming through, just we didn't mesh it together to actually succeed in this particular season. And I actually think finishing sixth is a real disappointment. And it's probably the most disappointing season since the sort of pre-Glenn Hoddle time.
I mean, I totally get what you say, and I don't disagree with it for a minute. But I actually think, you know, in hindsight, which of course is a luxury we didn't have back in 2001, I think finishing sixth was actually not bad really, because when you consider everything that was going on at the time, you know, Ranieri as manager, the unrest, all of that kind of thing, and also, you know, the injuries. I also think it's kind of quite a what we would call like a very present day Chelsea problem here, where expectations were set so high at the beginning of the season that if you don't meet those expectations, it's massively disappointing. And actually, interestingly enough, Spy mentions this on the season's review. You know, we would have bitten our arm off for a sixth place position 10 years prior, but Chelsea had changed as a football club and we were now saying, well, we should have a crack at the title. So I think that all plays into it. I mentioned injuries a minute ago, chaps. Jonathan, you know, the loss of Robbie Di Matteo, we didn't know it was career-ending at the time, but that was horrific. We lost Stanic for most of the season, who was the great hope in midfield. We had Wise, who was disgruntled. We had a young Sam Dalabona, who I think did all right. We had that plank Jukanovic. I mean, for me, the midfield was a complete mess, but it wasn't helped by those injuries, I don't think. I mean, Dennis, again, he alludes to this. He said that him and Robbie had set up such a good playing relationship that missing him was a massive factor.
I agree completely. They were hampered, but I still think they had the firepower to do better. I don't think I think Dennis being played out of position was a complete disaster. It was a ridiculous mistake by Ranieri. And Poyet played out of his skin all season and contributed a huge amount, but it just wasn't enough. There were too many players out of position or playing... who were not consistently being employed in a proper structure in the team, for me.
Mark?
Yeah, the thing I was going to say as well is, you know, despite all that, if you look at the top three, we didn't lose to the top three.
No.
Our defeats, and I think you made reference to it earlier, we lost to Bradford, they got relegated. We lost to Everton. They finished 16th again. We lost to Middlesbrough. They finished down the bottom. And we had, I think, Leicester, Charlton and Sunderland do the double over us. Now, if you've got any kind of Champions League high point of the table aspirations, you're winning at Sunderland home and away. You're winning at Charlton home and away. And you'd like to think, well, they're a much better side now. At that point, you'd be wanting to beat Leicester home and away. Now, if you win all of those, you got 12 extra points. You're second in the table and you're chasing United's tail through the title.
Well, I think that's the other thing, Mark, isn't it? I think that's a really, really good point about who we were not beating or who we were losing to. But, of course, the other blindingly obvious thing is the difference between the home form and the away form. I mean, we lost three matches all season at home, which, you know, isn't too bad. But the away form was terrible. We lost eight matches away from home. And as we know, it took us until March for our first away win of the season. You turn some of that around and it's a very different story. So that was, and they none of them seemed to know what it was. I mean, Vialli's weird quote at the beginning notwithstanding, but they've all, you know, all the players who were interviewed for the review DVD were saying, well, I think Marcel Desailly was saying, JK, that he had no idea why that was happening, but it was clearly a problem, wasn't it?
I think one of them mentioned that they were perhaps a little bit overconfident with some of the teams they played, which is a great possibility if you're playing Charlton away or Ipswich away. I think it was giving goals away. They'd been 2-0 up against Ipswich, hadn't they? And then they gave the 2 goals away in the last few minutes. It's just losing concentration. I think he was talking about concentration as well, which is something you wonder whether the mentality has been affected by the fact that certain players don't feel that they're being encouraged or given the best opportunity to play in their best positions.
Although it does, that also does tally with what Vialli said at the beginning of the season, weirdly, having not understood what he was talking about at all for the last two and a half hours.
Yeah.
Suddenly it becomes a bit more, you know, you can make some sense out of it. I think if there were two, you know, I mean, Vialli notwithstanding, I think if I was to summarise the season in terms of its disappointment, obviously, you know, not making any headway in the cups, getting knocked out of all of the cups we entered into really early was disappointing, because we had established ourselves as a really effective cup side because, we were the holders of the FA Cup for a start. So we were winning cup trophies, even though we got close but not close enough in the league.
But I suppose that's also down to luck a bit, Chidge, and drew Liverpool very early on.
Yeah, Arsenal.
And Arsenal in the fifth round. So. Yeah. In other seasons, we might have gone further.
Yeah, but St Gallen in the UEFA Cup was just, you know.
Yeah, that was just absolutely. That,
I mean, JK, I often wonder whether, you know, of course we can't know unless we talk to some of the players, really, but I wonder if losing Robbie in that second leg did for them. You know, maybe they were mentally unhinged a bit because of what happened.
Yes, it might have been a real shock for them, knowing that they'd seen that his leg was broken in a couple of places, and they'd been present and they'd seen it. Yeah.
They probably would have heard it, to be honest.
Yeah, that may have affected, because I think they were only 1-0 down. I mean, all they needed to do, even in the 2-1, wasn't it, was to score a goal, and they'd have gone through on away goals.
Exactly that.
It was just one of those games that just runs away from you. So.
Yeah. Anyway, as I was saying, I think the other disappointing thing for me, really, Mark, was that, you know, what we were seeing, really, you know, I didn't twig at the time, which seems completely odd, but we were seeing a transitionary phase being entered into, and transitionary phases tend to mean no trophies or competing for things for a while. But we'd lost Vialli, Di Matteo, Torre-Andre Flo, Petrescu had gone. And of course, against City, it was Poyet, Wise, and Leboeuf's last matches. So, you know, and there were rumours of Zola wanting to leave, as we know. So, effectively, what I'm saying is that great side of the 90s that won all of those trophies was being broken up, and it was going, and we were in transition. And my feeling at the end of this season was, well, that's that then. We've had a good ride. You know, I've seen us win 5 trophies. I might as well give it all up. You know, we've seen it all. You know, that's it. There was a real feeling that we'd kind of, you know, lost our best chance, in a sense, to go and have a crack at the title, and that period of winning things was about to come to an abrupt halt, because, Mark, we had seen this so many times before, hadn't we? You know, Chelsea getting close and then it all going tits up.
Yeah, that's a good point. When you sort of look back at it, and I don't think we realised at the time, because you're caught in it as a supporter, but looking back at it, yes, you're absolutely right. All these players, you know, were going and or about to go. And I think the only thing that probably why we didn't notice is we were still spending money. We were still competitive in the transfer market. We spent 25 million plus this season. If you add Gronkia, we spent over 30 million, which is big for Chelsea back then. You wouldn't get an average midfield player you'd loan out to Reading now for that sort of money. We spent more the following season. And we'll talk about it on the next show, because he said we bought Lampard, we bought Petit. So we brought other players in. So I don't think we realised at the time, but yeah, this was beginning of the end of an era, and then we had to wait a couple more years to sort of see a new era come in. The other thing I was going to say, because I've made reference to it a few times tonight, about why this might have happened and why we didn't succeed. Again, this is Hasselbank's words. I don't know why it took us so long, you know, what went wrong. Perhaps it was to do with the newly implemented rotation system by Ranieri. The manager used substitutes very often and far too often, in my opinion. He wanted to place his own mark on the squad. He wanted to play 3-4-3, so he preferred players who suited that system. However, he usually found himself playing 3-6-1. He often switched back and forth between the two systems, far too often, in my opinion. The latter system, 3-6-1, took a lot of energy out of the players, which was perhaps the reason for the overemphasis on our physical condition. We often, as players, told him about our concerns, but he viewed our complaints as votes of no confidence. He should have been a little better at accepting criticism and willing to listen to the players more. He was unwilling to tolerate any interference from players about his style of playing football. He felt somehow attacked by us and was unable to accept that criticism from the players that might have been seen constructive and positive. He viewed any kind of criticism as an undermining of his authority. Mm. So that's probably why Wise, LeBerf and Poirier were gone during the summer.
Yeah, because they would have been vocal about committing to that. I can see that. I mean,
disastrous.
Look,
it was a disaster for the club.
Well, I think we can say that in hindsight, kind of.
Learning this from Jimmy's clearly excellent autobiography.
Well, I mean, I worked with Graham Lasseau back in 2006, JK, and he was very interesting in what he said about Ranieri, and I can assure you that none of it was positive. In fact, actually worse than that.
In a sense, it's nice to see my observations of him as a manager just being confirmed.
Totally right, mate. Totally right. I mean, look, you know, having said all of that, I mean, it was disappointing, but, you know, we had you know, got European football again for the next season. And, of course, we had actually, you know, won a trophy with the Charity Shield. But I think the other thing that was positive out of this, although, again, we probably wouldn't have known it at the time, is that, you know, the emergence of JT, John Terry, who made 26 appearances and won the Player of the Year. And, you know, was, well, hey, you know, for Christ, I mean, he was like the first, not the first, but the last Academy product to actually make it, wasn't he, for years and years and years. But he was breaking through. We were seeing him emerge as a really good young player, which was good to see. I mean, I'll let you all comment on JT in a second, but just to sum it all up, I mean, the high points for me were Charity Shield, Stanich's goal against West Ham, United away draw, which I thought was wonderful. West Ham away, our first away win for a year, and always nice beating them. Jimmy Floyd, Hasselbank and Ida, JT, Dalla Bonner and Gronkjaer were all very impressive as far as I was concerned. And the low points were Viali sacking, that Silvino goal, which I still have nightmares about. Di Matteo breaking his leg. November, I mean, God almighty, November, we're shit in November. Torre André Faux leaving was really upsetting, and getting booted out of the FA Cup by Arsenal and losing to Sunderland at home, which was, I just thought, was terrible. But yeah, JK, JT?
Well, brilliant to see him come through, and also coached wonderfully by Desai, who he mentions, and they had a terrific partnership towards the end of the season. Though I don't want people to say, Ranieri, great manager, he brought JT through. No, JT was
no, he didn't. He was already through.
And he was, he was coming through. Yeah, but that's what people say is what, well, you know, not the benefits of Ranieri. He bought Frank Lampard. Good on him. A great manager. No, it was a purchase.
It's more nuanced than that. It always is. I mean, JT had been around for a while. He'd been played by Viali. Yeah, I mean, it's true to say he emerged.
Oldham. I remember seeing it in the back.
But he emerged
right back.
He emerged under Ranieri. That is, you know, he probably
was playing
broke
well
through.
Enough for him to be included.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you want to make a comparison, that's like saying Hudson-Odoi, you know, only broke through because of Sarri.
Yes. But that's what some people clutch onto, isn't it? When talking about Ranieri, they look at that as a positive.
Yeah.
As opposed to looking at the whole idiocy of the way that he ran the football team.
Yeah, indeed, which is what the players bear out. Mark, I'm going to leave the last word to you on the season, just for you to sum up your own thoughts on it.
No, I thought you gave a really good summary of like the high points of the season, and I think JT was certainly the high point, and I think Viali was the low point. And in between, there were some good home games, actually. We were very good at home, and as we talked about tonight, we were very poor away until we won at West Ham. Winning at Spurs is always good. But I think far too many silly results, losing the double to the likes of Charlton, losing to Leicester twice, losing to Sunderland twice, were low points as well. and Arsenal was a low point many times during the season and will be many times in future years to come. But as I said, what promised so much with the 25 million expenditure, with a brilliant transfer window, with the three players we bought and Panucci coming in, the fantastic start against the Charity Shield, as good as getting into Europe is the end product at the end of the season, it was still disappointing and it should have been a whole lot better.
Yeah.
And yet, the following season, I was still optimistic.
Because you always are, mate. That's why you love football. That's what it does to you, mate.
I love supporting the team.
I know, exactly that. Well, there you go. I've had more fun in the last 3 hours than I've had all day, all week, in fact. So I'm going to have a massive thank you to Mark Meehan.
Thank you. And I'll leave you with a little story, because obviously, like Carlo Cuccini was the other find of the season, and he came in at January at the expense of Ed De Hooy. But there's an absolutely brilliant Ed De Hooy story from this season, because obviously Ed always remained true to himself. He might have looked like a porn star, but he was never quite that bothered about his appearance when all the players used to dress like prima donnas. So he wasn't bothered about his looks. He didn't consider it important. So he used to wear what the players used to say, the exact same tracksuit each and every day. And the players were of the viewpoint, either he only had the one tracksuit and he was a bit of a tramp, or he had a lot of the same design tracksuit, because every single day he had the same tracksuit on. And none of them were ever dirty. So the players in the team were getting sick and tired of seeing him with this same tracksuit every day. So what they decided to do one day at training is they cut his tracksuit up to shreds. So he went home in his Chelsea training kit that day, and he went home in a very, very bad mood. However, what did he come back the following day wearing?
Chelsea tracksuit.
The same tracksuit they cut up the day before. The players were right. He had a supply of the same tracksuit. Oh. He may have wore the same tracksuit every day, but he had more than one of them. Yeah. Right. So they didn't bother cutting up his tracksuit ever again.
Brilliant. Brilliant story. Well done, Mark. JK, as always, a delight to spend 3 hours in your company of a Monday evening. It's been
one bows down to the brilliant analysis and stories by the young me in there. But at the same time, it's been very lovely to have been part of this, to have jogged my memory and made me feel the same irritation for both Viali and Ranieri that I had all those years ago, which I enjoy in a kind of strange, self-flagellating feeling.
So. Well, indeed. Well, we'll be back at some stage in the future to look back at the 2001-2002 season, the season where I turned up again, having been away for about 10 years or so. So, yeah, that'll be fun, because I might remember some of those games. You never know your luck. As I said, it's been absolutely fun doing this with Mark and JK. As always, I hope you lot out there have enjoyed listening to it as well, and we will see you all very soon. Up the Chelsea!
Up the Chelsea!
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.